In today's Mishnah, we're in the seventh and final Mishnah from the second parak of Masechta Avodah Zarah, and then we'll begin the third parak. The Mishnah begins, Elul Mutarim Bechila. The following items that belong to a non-Jew are permitted to even consume. There's no prohibition whatsoever. First is Chalav Shechalavo Goy Bisrael Ro'ehu. So this is where a non-Jew milks a cow, so it's his milk, but a Jew had observed it the entire time, ensuring that nothing else was mixed in. So most of the cases you'll see mirror the cases we learned in yesterday's Mishnah, in the second Mishnah. The next is Hadvash. Dvash refers to honey that belonged to a non-Jew. Why? Because anything you add to honey is going to ruin it. So there's no concern nothing's been added. Similarly, what about bishul goy? Maybe it's been cooked. Well, no, because honey can be consumed raw, and the prohibition of bishul akum doesn't apply to things that can be eaten raw. And also, what if it was still, what about it was put in their kalim? The answer to that is, well, even if it's been cooked in their kalim, any tam, any flavor that's been added would be tam lifgam, would not be contributing in a positive way, would be detrimental, and therefore it's mutar. Vadav devaniot. This refers to bunches of grapes. Afal pi sheh menatvot. Despite the fact there's juice coming out of it, you might think, I shouldn't be concerned now from yayin nesech or stam yayin. We say, no, it's not a problem. Similarly, in behem mishum hechsher mashke, even the juice that comes out of it is not considered liquid that it could machshir with it, that would now enable, say, other food that was picked from the tree to now become susceptible to tumah. Why? Is that because these grapes are meant for eating, any liquids that come out of it are not really noach. It's not really to the benefit of the person, because ultimately these grape bunches are really for to be eaten and not for their wine. Or kvashim, and here referring to pickled food, she'in dakam yitot letoch yayin v'chometz, they wouldn't normally add wine or vinegar, that would also be fine. V'tarit she'in utrufa, if we've got small cut fish that haven't been hashed up, in that situation, in other words, you can see the pieces of the fish, you can identify whether they're kosher fish or non-kosher fish, that would also be fine. V'tzir she'yesh badaga, we mentioned yesterday this, that a tzir, the fish brine, that has this small fish in it called a kilbit, is a siman, is a sign that it's from this brine from a kosher fish. Yesterday this chiltit was this very sharp leafy vegetable, and the point is here that if it's just a leaf from it has been cut up, then it hasn't been cut with a knife, and therefore it will be fine, as opposed to yesterday's Mishnah. V'zeitin gluskaot hamgulgalin. This is where they've taken a round kli, a vessel, and put in olives into it, and it sort of makes this nice gluska, almost like a bun out of it. So this big round circle of olives, and in that situation, it'd be mutar. There's no concern that they may have poured onto it wine as part of this process. This process is really to soften the olives. Rabbi Yossi says, on the hashluchin, if the olives are so soft, that when you pick them up, you can squeeze it and the pips will fly out. In that situation, according to Rabbi Yossi, you do have to be concerned they may have poured wine onto it. And then it'll be asurim. Let's continue. Hachagavim. We've mentioned previously that there were grasshoppers that are kosher or not kosher. Here we're referring to kosher ones. Haba'im min haslula, that are in a basket at the opening of the shop owned by a non-Jew. That would be asur, despite the fact that kosher grasshopper has a concern they may have poured wine onto it. However, min ha-haptek, if it's from the back of the shop in the storage room, and they're stored in barrels, in that situation, you don't have to be concerned to add wine because that will just ruin it. In other words, it sounds like they'd only add wine and when they're basically ready for sale as part of the presentation in the front of the shop. And that would also be true for truma. Now, what's it got to do with these Mishnah? Well, it's not really related to Avodah Zarah. It's referring to a situation where someone is suspected, for example, a Kohen who's suspected of selling truma produce as if it was chulin. Why would he do that? It's because there's less of a market of people who want to buy truma. And therefore, if he sold it as regular food, he can sell it to more people and he can get a better price from it. So the same distinction about the front of the shop or the back storeroom applies here. If he's chashud, if he's suspected, you cannot buy from his shop in the front. And again, he might be selling truma and says it's chulin. But what about the back of the store? Well, if it's in his vats, he'd be more concerned to start mixing truma in that situation out of concern that he gets caught. And the chachamim will say, all this storehouse is now hefker. They will define him completely. And therefore, since there's much of a risk of a loss for him, he wouldn't really start trying to package truma as if it's chulin for the stuff in the back of the shop, but for the small amount in the front, that's what we'd be concerned about. Let's now learn the first mission, the third parak. Here referring to objects of Avodah Zarah itself. Here one's not allowed to gain benefit from, and something is used for idol worship. Meaning something was worshipped, not just something was used till now that may have been used as part of idol worship. So Mishnah says, Kol Atzalamim Asurim. First understanding is any idols or images considered forbidden. Even if you don't know they've been used for Avodah Zarah, Mipnei Shehen Avdim Pamachat Bashana. Divrei Meir. Reb Meir says, Since many images that we have and idols that at least worship once a year, he's once again concerned for the minority. He says, therefore, all images you're not allowed to get drive any benefit. Chachamim says, no. Ein also ela kol sheyesh biyado makelot zipor kadur. Chachamim appreciate that there are statues and there are images that are actually for decorative purposes. Not everything is worshipped. And is not choshesh, they're not concerned for the minority. The only things, types of statues that would be forbidden are those that we know were generally worshipped. Those things they have in their hand, for example, there's a statue with a staff, makel, a tzipor, holding a bird, or holding a kadur. Gemara, I think it goes into much more detail from memory in terms of that he's demonstrated these types of idols, dominion or control and the like. The Gemara also, the Braita adds also, if it holds a sword or a crown or a ring, all these things are indications. Chachamim, this thing is quite likely, or if not definitely, an idol. What's interesting here, the Gemara says that this whole debate, whether we forbid all statues or only some, is only if we're talking about big cities. However, if it's a small village, since in small villages didn't really have statues for decorative purposes, then Chachamim would agree with the Reb Meir that it's quite likely that they're all idols, and therefore one's not allowed to drive any benefit. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, Kol sheyesh biyado kol davar. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel adds to the Chachamim, it's not just if they're holding these limited number of things, a staff, a bird, or a ball, ball is indicative of the globe, but rather, if it's holding anything in its hand, that's an indication, that's a siman, that this statue was made for purposes of idol worship, and therefore is also one not allowed to derive any benefit from it. Those are Mishnah today.